I can feel the quiet animosity simmering between the two of you.
Hey, so let's jump in, Steve. Listen, if you told me, or if you asked me what the ideal podcast guest is, I would say three things. One, they have to have a familiarity with Austin because everybody talks about Austin. Two, they have to be a baseball fan because baseball is the greatest sport on earth. And three, they need a haircut like Morrissey because that means they're really cool. And I didn't think you could find that person, but we actually did. And his name is Gary Cohen from CFP. I'm only kidding. I always admired his hair, being a guy that has barely any, Gary. But welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me on. I really honestly can't ask for a better introduction to that. If you want to talk Austin, baseball, and Morrissey, this is going to be a great podcast.
You're the man. You're our man.
Hey, Gary, you do have an interesting background, right? So before you're a senior editor and you kind of own the process at CFE Media, which is a media group that caters to security, OT, a lot of the industrial kind of edge discussions Steve and I have fall right under into your kind of swim lane. You got that really interesting kind of thing you do now. But prior to this, you did a lot of writing about Chicago Cubs, right? I mean, you were kind of like an insider there.
I did. I was for 8 years, I was running their publications department. So I did the magazine, the scorecards, the yearbooks, quite a bit of online content, video content. So yeah, I was working in baseball for the 10 years prior to this. I had my own company for two and the Cubs were still one of my clients. So I came in 2011, right as the team was getting torn down, was there for the ride, up the roller coaster hill and winning the 2016 World Series, and then a little bit of a downturn after that. But yeah, that was my entry into industrial cybersecurity. Probably not the traditional path.
It's so cool, though. I mean, I'm a lifelong Red Sox fan, Boston guy. C.O. Epstein was, he was our modern-day savior, as he was to the Cubs. A lot of Red Sox influence with Lester, pitching for you during that season. I love the parallels between the two teams and the two cities.
Yeah, I think so too. I think everybody from Boston and Chicago will have an undying love for Theo Epstein. I remember when he first came, the Chicago Sun-Times had a cover with Theo literally walking on water. They had mocked up a graphic with him walking on Lake Michigan. And it's sort of how everybody felt about him while he was here. But you can't, I mean, he ended the quote-unquote curse in Boston and turned them into a winner. He ended the curse in Chicago. Yeah. I think he got out of running baseball teams at the right time. And hopefully he'll have a good impact on the game of baseball now as part of MLB. But I don't think there are many people or Cubs fans who will not have a lifelong love for Theo Epstein after what he did here.
Yeah. And, I don't think people in general appreciate how much he shaped that GM role and, kind of the front office operations for baseball. He really did revolutionize the way baseball teams approach building and sustaining teams.
Absolutely. I mean, he was also, when he came in Boston, you'll probably know this better than I, but he was, 28 years old when he took over the GM position? I mean, he was a kid. Yeah. Was great at trying to find the kind of market inefficiencies. What are other people not doing that we can do that we can capitalize on? It's taking Moneyball to the next level and trying to figure out how they can get ahead of other teams. That was his specialty, and he did it really, really well, which is why you saw the Red Sox built the way they were, which is why you saw the Cubs take a chance on a guy like Jake Arrieta, who had underperformed his whole career, but could do this, this, and this really well. Yeah. He had some incredible finds with both of those teams. Now every team does this stuff.
Yes, 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 indeed. Yep. Yeah. Sorry, Steve hates baseball. Sorry, Steve.
It comes from a place of ignorance. It's not hate.
Well, it comes from a place of hate. That's all right.
We were talking before the podcast about the low boiling animosity between the two of you. I see it coming out already. I'm expecting fireworks as this podcast goes on.
Yeah, it's supposed to be showing our dirty laundry on air here. That's not cool.
Matt is my third wife.
Anyway, how does that tie into industrial cybersecurity? So tell us a little bit about what you do at CFE Media, Gary. Give us kind of the, you know, the rundown.
Sure. How it ties into industrial cybersecurity is probably hardly at all. But I come in with a journalistic background. So that's what I come to this in. And I have, in my career, run publications on in everything from healthcare to baseball to, I've done content marketing. I've done podcasts and videos. So industrial cybersecurity was something new and was kind of a challenge for me. I'll tell you a little bit about CFE Media and then about what I do there. So you mentioned earlier CFE Media. We are CFE, content for engineers. So we talk primarily to engineering folks, a little bit probably different than the slant that you guys take on things, which is I think you guys are more IT-centric. We're more operational technology, more OT-centric, because we're talking to engineers, to people who kind of have the boots on the ground. We, CFE Media, launched a new brand at the start of 2021 called Industrial Cybersecurity Pulse. I came on ostensibly to help shepherd that brand's editorial voice. And we've been building ever since then. So we've been trying to, we do talk to IT people as well, but the lion's share of our audience is on the OT side. So we're talking a lot about the need for IT and OT to come together and talk to each other and bridge that gap. I mean, I'm sure you guys see it. When there is a cybersecurity breach or cybersecurity is brought up, the default is always, send it to the IT people. That's computer stuff. They know what they're doing. There is no reason that the IT people really understand what's going on a plant floor. Some do, but there's no reason they should, in the same way that, you know, a plumber shouldn't understand how to give you a root canal. They're just very different jobs.
Right. So, you know, you say that, right? I mean, you talk to OT folks all the time. Do you hear about this, you know, this, sorry to jump right in, but this, you know, this convergence of IT and OT and, you know, the barriers that are there. And, you know, do you think that's more hype than it is reality? Do you think it's an imminent, you know, kind of convergence that's kind of right on our horizon? Or what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah. First, I'd like to point out that we haven't even covered Morrissey yet. So I'm a little disappointed, but we'll jump into IT, OT, convergence. Whether it's imminent, I don't know. The skeptic in me says no. I don't think every organization is immediately going to go, we got to get these people together. I do think the sort of rash of cybersecurity breaches that have happened in the last year, especially the supply chain ones, the SolarWinds and Kaseyas, have opened people's eyes. A Colonial Pipeline actually is a great example to how interconnected IT and OT are. If my understanding of it is correct, the Colonial Pipeline breach, they basically went into the billing issues. I mean, it was an IT breach. But Colonial was worried enough that their IT and OT were so interconnected that they shut down the pipeline. So gas stopped flowing. There were runs on gas stations in southern states. There were problems in the eastern seaboard because IT-OT convergence is happening. You know, there used to be this idea that the machines on the plant floor are air-gapped. They're not connected to the internet. No one can touch them. We're fine. That just doesn't exist anymore. Everything's connected to the internet and people know how to get to them. So I think people are, there's a really long way around to this answer, but I think people are cognizant of the fact that IT and OT need to work together. From the people that we've talked to, I don't see that it is getting fixed right now. It's just like, yeah, this is something we probably need to do. Let's bring an OT person into this committee that talks about cybersecurity. But I don't know that the problem is getting solved right now.
But, you know, it's a little disheartening to hear you say that. And there's not a disagreement, but I mean, you can go all the way back to, I can't remember if it was 2012, the big Target hack. Remember Christmas season? Mm-hmm. That all came about because of an HVAC contractor that had elevated privilege into Target's network to manage the environmental controls for a store. And somebody was able to, the credentials were written down on paper. Somebody went and looked at them, grabbed them, gave them to somebody. And before you know it, you know, we're hundreds of millions of dollars. It's like, this has been going on. And this, you know, this even if not organizationally, you know, kind of technically, this convert, you know, this, you know, OT and IT or operational, right, more industrial kind of stuff, and the IT side have been having to kind of coexist for some time. And, you know, it's like, I'm surprised we have not woken up to this sooner, and that you still have exploits like Colonial Pipeline going on, the big shipping company back about 3 years ago.
Yeah, Maersk, yeah.
Yeah, it's like all of these things are still going on. It's like, when are we going to finally learn our lesson and do something about this?
Right. I mean, I do think situations like SolarWinds and Colonial Pipeline have brought cybersecurity to the fore. I think people are starting to – I do think people realize that the threat is out there and that it's something that they need to worry about. I think people are starting to inch toward – it's not a matter of if anymore. It's a matter of when. We're all vulnerable. It's just, when does somebody train their eyes on us, and how bad do we get hit? I think one of the issues with this, and it's something we talk to people about a lot, is cybersecurity needs investment. It needs to have buy-in from the upper levels of an organization. It needs the C-suite to say, yes, we are willing to spend on this. And that can be a hard sell, because cybersecurity – and, you know, creating that kind of IT-OT convergence, it's a contingent cost, meaning, I mean, if we don't get hit by a cyber attack this year, then that's kind of wasted money. We could have spent that on creating whatever. We could have invested that into a new product or a new process. So it's hard to get someone to agree to the outlay that it would take to really shore up cybersecurity. But I do think the high-profile attacks like the SolarWinds, like the Colonial Pipeline, like the Log4j vulnerability that was just, you know, hit everybody, I think that has opened people's eyes to the fact that, yeah, we probably do need to invest in this. I mean, we did some research recently at CFE on industrial cybersecurity, and most of the people that we talked to have said that they have raised their cybersecurity budget in the last year. So at least people are starting to understand it. But I agree with you. I think it's disappointing that that more organizations don't have a situation where IT and OT are working together
better. You know, it's funny you say that, because what we find on the IT side is it's not usually an issue of budget or spend. There's a lot of money going into cybersecurity initiatives. But you've got, you know, you go to your typical enterprise and they have dozens, if not more than dozens, of point security solutions that are being used either in pockets, right, or designed for broader use, but really are not reaching their potential. And so you've got these companies that really don't have a good handle on their cybersecurity landscape, you know, access management, device management, you know, privileged access. There are all these different ways, firewalls, there are all these different things that are being done. And it's, and even though you have, you know, these security teams, it's still very pointy in nature, right? And it's like, I'm wondering on the OT side, because I don't see it as much on the IT side, if there is a rigor and a discipline around kind of approach to cybersecurity, you know, holistically go in, measure where you are, you know, all these standards around from NIST and everybody else, right? You know, are they being adopted and really utilized and operationalized within these OT organizations?
I think that's an excellent question. First, I want to preface this by saying I'm a media person. I'm somebody who covers the industry. So I am not the expert on all of these things. So what I'm saying to you, this is stuff I've gleaned from talking to people who are in the field. So what you said is the reason that IT and OT need to be truly, literally working together, because OT needs to be learning from IT and IT needs to be learning from OT, because IT does have experience in securing systems. They understand how to do this. One of the big issues that a lot of our OT people talk to us about is when you're looking at operational technology, a lot of these machines that are out on the plant floor are 20, 30 years old. Yeah. They're reliable and they work great. And it costs a whole lot of money to take those offline and replace them. And they were designed before cybersecurity was an issue. And so they are not designed with cybersecurity in mind. And the upgrades that need to happen either aren't happening because companies don't want to take, you know, Molson Coors doesn't want to take their plant operations offline. It costs them money.
Yeah.
And then the other part is a lot of these systems are so old that there aren't patches. There aren't updates anymore. They aren't supported anymore by anybody. Right. And so you've got machines. And then B, you've got a little bit of a knowledge gap, which is you've got people who have been working in operational technology for 20, 30 years who know how to service these machines. But cybersecurity was not part of their job. It was not something they thought about. And so I do think there is, and obviously this doesn't relate to everybody, but there is still a little bit of a like, not my job mentality. This isn't what I do. Cybersecurity isn't something that I should have to think about. So there's, I think more and more people on the OT side are coming to the realization that they do need to be thinking about this all the time, that their systems are vulnerable, that and that cyber attacks or threat actors will go after these systems. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, IT at least is generally ahead of the curve or with the curve, technologically speaking. A lot of OT systems are not. They're behind the curve.
You know, it's funny you say that because in the OT side, it's you know, Steve and I both have friends and family that work in that kind of OT side of the equation. And when we talk to them, you know, it sounds like our security is more of a physical construct, or it initially was a physical construct, and the cyber side was, to what you're saying, was not nearly important. And part of it is, to what you're saying, you know, you have these, you know, water treatment plants, these power plants, these bottling companies that are decades old. And when they were being constructed and when the systems were put in place, security really was cantina wire around the top of the fence and double locks in the doors, right?
Security from an OT side a lot of times meant safety.
And safety,
let's make sure people don't get hurt. I mean, that's been very much internalized on the OT side is safety. And that's kind of what security means, not so much cybersecurity.
Yeah. Yeah. What trends do you see on, you know, the security side for OT? Is it around, you know, implementing depth and defense from a cyber perspective? Is it, you know, becoming more adherent to regulatory, or what are the concerns you're hearing from the folks you talk to as well? I mean, this has been a weird year for cybersecurity, given all that's going on in the world.
It is. I mean, I think it's a little from column A and a little from column B. Like, there's a lot of concerns right now. Obviously, the Biden administration has tried, especially because SolarWinds happened right after they came online, and Oldsmar in Florida happened just before. And so they are trying to shore up national cybersecurity, especially protecting critical infrastructure, which that's a point you just brought up, which, I mean, what's a good cybersecurity discussion without a little scare? That's the thing that scares me the most, is most of what's happening is, or at least it's been reported on publicly, is ransomware. People are going in, trying to get money out, and, you know, really aren't doing that much damage other than to companies reputationally and financially.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no reason that threat actors can't go in and attack OT operations in critical infrastructure, water, wastewater, nuclear, energy, electricity, power. They can go, I mean, it's been proven time and time again. They can go in, they can make a boiler explode. They can, if you're talking about facilities, everything is networked now. You can control HVAC, you can control elevators, you can control all of those things. That's the scarier side of it to me. And so the trends to try to protect those, yes, government regulations are, they're trying to step in. I don't know how effective that's been as of right now, from what I'm hearing, not overly. It's a good step in the right direction and sets a good baseline for everybody. I'm not sure it's really changed behaviors yet.
Sure.
I think zero trust is something, and that is something that the Biden administration is pushing hard on, is zero trust, which is, I mean, you guys know, don't trust anything. Nobody is reliable, internal, external, don't trust. Yeah. Which seems like a good solution, but has inherent problems as well. Makes
sounds
everybody...
like my childhood. Yes, go ahead.
Exactly. Yeah, I think my parents had that too with me. I gave them good reason, but yeah. So I mean, that's one of the things that's out there. you know, shoring up the supply chain. I know everybody's a little sick of hearing supply chain, but the software supply chain, I think, is that's something that people are really looking to do because SolarWinds scared a lot of people. Yeah. And man, if you're looking to optimize your attack surface, hey, I can't go after Google. Google's really, they've got really strong defenses, but Google doesn't make all of their products. They use 1,000 third-party vendors to cobble these together. So if I can find one third-party vendor that has lax security and get in there, I can get Google and the thousands of companies that they work with. Yep. And so trying to shore up that supply chain, the security of the supply chain is also going to be big.
Do you see a lot in the OT side? You know, it's funny because when you, supply chain in particular, when I think about OT, you know, it seems like everything we acquire now from, you know, machinery to, you know, to outfit our factories to what factories we have to the machinery and the treatment plants and power plants, it's all manufactured somewhere else. And I remember there was a big brouhaha a few years ago, maybe it was longer than that, I'm getting old, around, you know, we had outsourced so much to China from a military perspective that there were concerns around what was being manufactured and put into our military equipment. Do you find a, you know, kind of similar concern around, you know, OT in general, regardless of what the specific vertical might be?
I think that I'm not sure I'm the best person to speak to that, but I think that concern is there. And it's the same idea of who are your components coming from? And there's visibility is so important in cybersecurity, just knowing what you're dealing with. And that's becoming more and more difficult because, as we talked about before, if you're talking about software or a physical product, nobody really knows where all the components are coming from. Just because you are using Honeywell products doesn't mean that Honeywell is only using Honeywell products. That's right. And so, yeah, that I think is, like I said, I'm not the most intelligent person on this topic, but I do think that is a concern because even if you think you know where all of your, where all of the products on your plant floor, all the products in your software chain are coming from, you probably don't because your supplier might not even know where those things are coming from. So one of those solutions to that as a solution, one thing that can help is a software bill of materials, which is a comprehensive, exactly what you would think. It's like a recipe, a comprehensive list of everything that's going into a piece of software, if you're talking about software in general.
Yeah.
But, you know, and people are starting to use those, and I think that can help a little bit. But there's the same issue with physical products, with a machine on the plant floor, is where did my components come from? Yeah.
There was an issue a few years ago. Steve, remember a few years ago, the BMC issue that one of the server vendors had, where come to find out it was being, it was a BIOS BMC issue where an unfriendly state was able to access certain kinds of servers through the management controller because of exploits that a state-owned supplier had built into that chip. So, I mean, it literally happens, and it's kind of scary, but it happens, and it's not always easy to protect against those, and sometimes you don't know you're vulnerable until you're exploited, right?
And that's, I think that's exactly, I mean, you look at a global company like Huawei. I mean, that's an issue is, do we know, I mean, obviously they don't do a ton of business in the US, but do we know what kind of components they're putting into the products they're selling everywhere else in the world?
Right.
Definitely. Right. Yeah, definitely a huge issue.
So, you know, tying this back to CFE, cause I know we're talking a lot and I won't shut up.
I have that same problem, by the way.
What's that?
I said, I have that same problem, by the way.
Okay, we're kindred spirits. tying this back to CFE Media, you know, how do you work with OT, you know, an OT plant manager, somebody who, you know, is charged with maintaining systems on that side of the equation? How do you help them become better informed and make better decisions and all that neat stuff?
It's through the publications that we have. I mean, whether that's control engineering or plant engineering, consulting, specifying engineer, industrial cybersecurity pulse, we're a media company, but I think the mandate that we all feel is let's help people do their jobs better. So industrial cybersecurity pulse, the one that I work on, is a little newsier, which means we create a lot of content. We're writing a lot. But we also know that, and this goes across all the brands, is that engineers, the people we talk to, want to hear from other engineers. They want to hear from other experts. So we try to build out networks of people who are a lot smarter than we are. I'll just take the hit. Smarter than I am. Who really can talk about these issues in a way that other engineers, other practitioners understand. So we are, you know, I can talk specifically about Industrial Cybersecurity Pulse. We are talking to everybody from security companies, the, you know, Dragoses and Industrial Defenders of the world, to manufacturers. We did a webcast recently where we had one person from a cybersecurity company. We had one person from a global manufacturer talking about cybersecurity. So we're trying to come at it from every different angle and give people insight into what they need to be thinking about, what they can do better. You know, we're talking about IT-OT convergence. We've reached out to a lot of these people and written a lot on and done webcasts and things like videos on what can these sides learn from each other? What should IT be learning from OT? What should OT be learning from IT? You know, I mean, I spoke to somebody yesterday who runs a CEO of a cybersecurity company. And we were talking about IT-OT convergence earlier in the podcast. And he said, you know, I was talking about, yeah, they really need to talk to each other, I said in my uninformed way. And he was like, yeah, that's part of it. But I also think, you know, it usually falls on the CISO. And the CISO is not always equipped. So this might need a new position. There might need to be a new position that is really handling OT cybersecurity and critical infrastructure, because the CISO isn't always laser focused on what's going on there. And so it's trying to talk to people who are, again, smarter than I am, who can give me insights into and give our readers and our users insights into ways that we can improve these processes. The crux of all of this, and Matt, you hinted at it earlier, is, man, threat actors are smart and they're usually a step ahead of the defenders. So even if you create the most wonderful firewall, the most wonderful defense, there's still someone who's going to get around it. I think the physical manifestation of that, and this is not a political comment, but you know, you look at the border wall that was built in Texas, on the southern border, yeah, under the last administration, very touted. They put it up, they showed it off, and within 2 days, there were people shooting videos of like, here's how we drilled through it, here's how we went under, here's how we went over, here's, because, man, you put up a wall, people are going to find their way around it, and threat actors are very good at doing that.
You're right, and, you know, tying back to the CISO thing, too, it's, and, you know, kind of the need for OT focused, they're completely different ecosystems, right? I mean, the security, I shouldn't say completely, but, you know, there's not as much overlap between the companies that are focusing on OT cybersecurity versus IT cybersecurity, right? And, you know, yeah, there's some, but it's like they are, and they're different problem sets, and they're different, everything is different about them. And it's okay to say we have these similarities. I'm doing hand gestures for the audience. We have these things in common that we can tackle together. But, you know, these other things will never find common ground. And you have to treat them as, you know, separate children with separate set of needs. Right.
Yeah. And I think just that understanding of these are very different. You know, IT is great at protecting IT. OT is good at protecting OT and needs to maybe learn more about the cyber issues. But understand, you know, if you could be the best IT person in the world, but if you are tasked, if you work for whoever, carrier, and you've got to secure the plant floor, you've got to understand where your limitations are and make sure that you're talking to the people on that OT side to go, what is in that box with the blinking lights over there? Is that connected to the internet? Where? And where is it vulnerable? I think if those conversations are happening, we're very much moving in the right direction. But your point, Matt, is really well taken, which is it starts with understanding. It starts with acknowledging that these are very different things and need to be treated differently.
Hey, final question from me. And I know Steve might have a couple, but final question from me, final two questions. Favorite Morrissey song, favorite Morrissey album, if you have them, go.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is it's the hack answer, but Meat is Murder. Favorite Morrissey song.
How soon is that?
I don't want to choose between my babies.
All right, that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah. Do you have one? Do you have a favorite?
I do. So, you know, when the split happened, I was a big fan of his first album there, Viva Hate. But I think it was the follow-on, Vauxhall and I, which everybody panned, I really liked. Yeah. That was my favorite album. Favorite song? I don't, you know, I'm a bigger fan of some of the Smith songs, but, you know, I'm like you. There are so many good, he's done so many, and he's gone in so many different directions, even within right. that alternative space. It's hard to choose one.
Yeah. Well, that's why I immediately went to the Smiths, too, when you asked. I was like, I sort of conflate the two. It's all Morrissey.
Well, it's all but Morrissey.
I was playing some Morrissey music for my kids, who are still fairly young, 9 and 11, the other day, and they were sort of making fun of him a little bit. And I was like, yeah, Morrissey is very sad. Very sad man. Very sad song.
Good music. He makes dying sound joyful. Yes.
That's right. Why is he so sad? I don't know. He's just very sad.
Manchester. Go to Manchester, United Kingdom, and you'll see why.
Exactly. Yep. Anyway.
Steve, did I dominate the whole time? I'm sorry.
Steve just got mad about the baseball conversation at the outset and checked out. He was like, "That's we're talking right. Theo Epstein. I'm out of here."
Hey, so Gary, thanks a lot for taking the time and doing this. It was a great conversation. I took about 6 pages of notes here while you were talking. That's why I was so quiet, because I'm in learn mode on this topic. So,
oh, absolutely. It was a pleasure being on here. And actually, I think there's, this may be for off the podcast, but I think there's so much we can learn from each other, because you guys, I'm sure, know you've forgotten more about IT than I know. And, you know, I have a pretty good insight into OT. And we're talking about these conversations that need to happen between the two sides. I think there's a lot of value in it.
We're really fascinated about kind of the intersection point, right? And where there's maybe tension, and maybe there's cooperation, or we're still trying to figure out, you know, who owns what. So I think there's a lot of discussion that can happen, you know, around that.
Yeah. And that, the question of who owns it is really one of the first meetings I had with a system integrator right when I came on. It was the first thing he asked me. Who owns OT cybersecurity? Right. Like, I don't know. You know, and he would posit that OT needs to own OT cybersecurity. But I've talked to other people who say other things. It needs to be a combination. It needs, but that question of ownership, I think, is a good one too.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Gary, and thanks to our listener and Matt. We will do this again in a week or so.
Our listener.
I'll listen to this one. You'll have two this time.
Yeah.
My mom doesn't make it to the end. Yeah.